This is Application Paranoia, Season 2, Episode 15. So welcome again to Application Paranoia, a podcast dedicated to application security, DevSecOps, and AppScan. I'm Colin Bell, and joining me as always are my devoted colleagues, Rob Cuddy and Chris Dewar. In this episode, we're also excited to be joined once again by Matt Murphy, who is one of our principal technical architects. And you may remember Matt joined us way back in episode 2. So hi, Rob. What's been happening in your world?
Hey, Colin. Lots been happening, actually. It's been a really busy couple of weeks. We got the chance to do a recording for the skill up days that went live yesterday.
We did.
So very excited about that. Yes,
we did.
Got a chance to do that. We got a couple other events that are coming up. But the best thing I've seen recently, as some of you may have seen it, was the story of a Frontier Airlines flight attendant who ended up duct-taping a passenger to his ass.
Can you imagine how that went down?
Sir,
you need to sit or you're going to get duct-taped.
So
I'm not sitting. You're getting duct-taped.
It was outstanding, right? Because the initial video itself was great, but then about a day or two later, a comedian here in the United States posed as the flight attendant and made his own video about the story, and it went viral with so many people thinking that that was actually the guy.
I've been sucked in. I thought that was the flight attendant.
No, it turned out that he's actually just a comedian, and his video is hysterical. There's commentary on there we can't quite talk about, but it was so brilliantly done. That has been making the rounds, and my family has enjoyed watching that numerous times. So,
more proof and evidence that duct tape fixes all problems.
Yeah, exactly.
There used to be a thing, the duct tape guys, and they
build a boat out of it or something.
The things they would do with duct tape and WD-40.
Well, you guys know, I work with students, and so a number of years ago, it was actually quite popular to do things like make duct tape wallets and duct tape pen caps and flowers and stuff like that. That just seemed to be insane. So we ended up getting something like 20 or 25 different types of duct tape rolls, right? So different patterns, colors, and stuff like that. And there's still several of them sitting around my house. And my kids are now in college, so I'll let you know how that went.
It's a magic thing, is duct tape.
Yes.
So, Chris, how's it going?
Well, for us, it's pretty good. Nice little heat wave coming through. Had to stay inside for a lot, but still getting out and playing my disc golf, having good times.
Very good. I'd like to think that I could say the same thing. I actually came to an end of my running streak.
No.
I did. I injured my sort of posterior tibial tendon, which is the tendon that sort of joins your sort of the tibia bone to your ankle sort of thing. So, and for the last week, it's been painful, but I got myself to 500 days in a row. So there you go.
That's crazy. So you've seen the top of the mountain. You're like, no, it's scary up here.
So I've not run all week, So I ran this morning, but for most of the week I haven't. So I have to rest it. But I did manage to get something like 8,394 kilometers done.
So that's crazy. Their cars are a thing, right?
Yeah. Averaging 16.79 a day. So there you go.
He's like the man who runs a marathon because it's on his way.
That is an outstanding accomplishment, though.
That is insanity. That's nuts.
It is. I'll never get near it again,
Year-long or a year and a half, year and two-thirds in the making.
Yeah, 500 days. Yeah, nah, not doing it again. I did deliver 1,284 newspapers, though.
So. No, that's nice. That's odd that you kept track, but that's nice.
Well, I just know how many I buy.
That's over two a day, so that's a lot.
It is a lot, yeah. So, Matt, thanks for joining us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Matt, you were our second ever guest. And we're now up to episode 50. We're in, way into our 30s now. So, I mean, 32 episodes I think we're into now at this stage.
That's so, pretty good.
So 30 episodes have passed since you last with us.
Seems like only yesterday.
So what have you been up to? What's been keeping you entertained?
I don't know, actually. Same old. I have nothing really changed. I play golf. I go fishing, hang out. Nothing really.
Fishing sounds good. I'd like to do a bit of fishing.
Yeah, when you catch something.
Oh, not that sort of fishing. Oh, okay, with fish. All right.
Yeah, with fish. With rods.
What kind of fishing did you think he was talking about? You're like, I want to go get some people's login information.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Exactly. Well, it is an application security podcast.
I'd like to do some casual fishing among my friends and family. I now have free Netflix.
Exactly. But see, he plays real golf, Chris. So
no, he plays ball golf is what we call
ball golf.
Ball golf. Yeah. It's like soccer and football, you know, just like that.
As opposed to frisbee golf, yeah.
Yes. Well, which is funny. So you guys will remember, I found recently, I was hiking around Mount Baldy, which is in the mountains here outside of Los Angeles. And they do overnight tent cabins that you can rent. But one of the big plugs for their rentals is the fact that they have a disc golf course and they give you discs to use for it. So it's the first place I've seen out here that actually highlights disc golf for folks who are enthusiasts. So
you know, California is like the birthplace of it, so I'm surprised that that's the only place you've heard of. Have a bunch of them around here too.
I've seen it's not something I actually look for. I've seen plenty of courses, but I haven't seen it advertised with kind of a resort rental. So
I'm telling you, you try it, you'll be hooked. I'm just saying. Nobody believes me. Nobody wants to give it a whirl. But yeah,
hey, I saw the Sports Center shot, fun. Right? I've seen the throw scene around the world, yep. Right? Whatever. So there's some impressive ones. It's fun.
For this week, I thought we might discuss, and there's reason for it because there's been a bit of security news, which is quite interesting and entertaining. But in order to sort of get us there, I think we need to discuss cryptocurrencies. So just curious, what are your thoughts on cryptocurrencies?
Oh,
what do we know about them?
We know a lot and not enough.
Yeah, that's a good
that's
way to say it.
That's kind of how it goes. Like everybody exactly. thinks Bitcoin when you say cryptocurrencies, but they're like thousands of coins that you can invest in or buy, some of which have questionable nebulous value and others which are used for actual things. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting world, I think. Decentralizing finance, not going through banks anymore and just doing it through other folks who are also invested in cryptocurrency. It's a pretty wild ecosystem. Like the Wild West of the gold rush before the gold rush was a thing. I mean, we're living in some pretty remarkable times.
Right. And there's a lot to it, too, when you think about the Ethereum piece. Of course, my favorite is watching all the Dogecoin folks that get excited that it might finally get to a dollar and then it doesn't. And then it does. And then and there's all of that in there. But yeah, it's fascinating to kind of watch it. And to me, it's really interesting because it gets in this sort of space of kind of a one world currency, if you will, right? So you don't necessarily have the conversions and country borders and things like that. A Bitcoin is a Bitcoin is a Bitcoin, right? A Dogecoin is a Dogecoin, regardless of where you go. And so that has some really interesting implications to it, you know, as that starts to unfold.
Some massive, massive world changing implications that we haven't even seen yet. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Like we're in its infancy still, believe it or not. It's crazy what it can do.
I did see recently that El Salvador made Bitcoin its official currency.
Yep.
You know, so you can only assume that they're trying to make themselves either very rich or very poor.
No, it's a little bit to combat hyperinflation is what their take is on it. Because a lot of their family members work outside of El Salvador and send money back. And that cost is pretty high to send money through the SWIFT system or whatever the system is there for banks. But for Bitcoin, it's as simple as what's your wallet address? Here you go. It's pretty wildly revolutionary for that country
to be able to say this is a currency. It's a very small country, I suppose.
It is. It's a start. There's a bunch of others that are signing up to make it a currency also, and there are tax implications to that, because to send money, you don't have to pay taxes, right? But to send, say, stocks or bonds or something like that that somebody would have to sell, typically you would have to pay some kind of tax on that. But with Bitcoin, in El Salvador anyways, there's no tax. There's just a fee for using the network, which is, you know, nominal. It's not that huge. It's a pretty world-changing event for them. And we haven't even caught up to the revolution that's going to happen in El Salvador because of it. The financial revolution, I should say.
Well, and the same thing going on here too, where folks are trying to figure out the tax implications and can they, right? Because historically you've got the stocks and capital gains and things like that. But
yeah,
it's interesting to see how governments are starting to react and try to figure different things out on it. So
yeah, regulations and should we make it safe and is it safe and should I put my money there and all of those questions that come around. And yeah, it's an interesting world to be in for sure.
The other one, I guess, which is of interest is NFT tokens, or non-fungible tokens. So my understanding of it, and it's very limited, is that, you know, that's like getting an image. So maybe it's an image of someone scoring a goal or, you know, doing something amazing in basketball, and you buy that as a token and sort of own it and can trade it and whatever else, much like you would, you know, a trading card or something. Do you know much about that side of things?
I know there's some ridiculous ones that are out there.
Yeah, there's like a whole series of athletics. Whales.
Yeah, exactly. No,
there's like Bitcoin of whales, and the dude that made them made like 11 some odd million dollars selling his little whale collection to different people. But the idea behind an NFT, I think, is fantastic. It's like having the Mona Lisa in digital form that you can buy, sell, trade, or use for different purposes that nobody can ever, you know, make another Mona Lisa. There's only ever one. But that's right. It's like a painting in digital form or a sculpture in digital form. And we don't really think of that, you know, as regular people with art, because that's just not our world. But if you translate that into, say, gaming worlds where you have a weapon, now that weapon can follow you from game to game to game to game, and that weapon never changes. It is what it is. So it's pretty remarkable what you can do with this. Or you could sell, I don't know, a lifetime pass to a one Big Mac a day or something silly like that. And if you have the NFT, you get the benefits from it. I mean, we haven't even begun to see what NFTs can do to our world. Like, all of this cryptocurrency stuff is just, it's in its infancy. I don't think we have seen what it can do yet. But NFTs are remarkable with the power they can give just to the average user, to regular people like us.
But I think the difference with Bitcoin, it's a finite number of Bitcoins that exist, whereas with NFTs,
it's super finite. There's one. Every NFT is unique, completely unique. It's a mind-boggling approach.
But you have to go after the right one, you know. It's like,
well, if you're investing it, just like art, you'd have to, you know, buy the Monets or the whatever the other ones are. You know, you'd have to buy the real one to be able to sell the real one. And certainly you're going to have a bunch of opportunity to buy the right one if you want. But that's as an investment strategy. If you use it as a tool, that's a whole different ballgame now. I mean, imagine if you could have, I don't know, 10 cents off of gas for the rest of your life, and all you had to do was buy this $50 NFT. A lot of people would sign up for that. And, you know, maybe you have 100 of such NFTs that you're selling as a company and say, you know what, this is what you get forever and always. You're welcome. Invest in our NFT. Front load the investment, whatever it is. There's a lot of application for what an NFT can and should do that we haven't even approached, especially in the gaming world, which is a multi-billion-dollar industry. It's a big industry.
Yeah, and the place I've seen it in interesting, you know, the newer applications, right? I'm a big sports fan, so I'm seeing, you know, young athletes. So the NBA draft that just happened very recently, there was a guy named Evan Mobley who I happen to have followed because he's an SC guy and that's where I went to school. But he created an NFT of himself going into the draft before he had even been selected. And so had that sort of as an image of, you know, him in an SC uniform with an NBA logo and all of that kind of stuff. And so people are now using that as a way to generate income down the road, right? And so I think with colleges here in the States opening up their NIL stuff, right? So allowing athletes to now be endorsing things for their own benefit, stuff like that. This whole world opens up tremendous amount of possibilities and different things that way. So it's going to be fascinating to see where a lot of this ends up going in the next handful of years or so.
Yeah. Yeah, the one I saw that caught my attention, it's kind of in the news a bit this week as well, was there's an animation that's been made by Miley Kunis and Ashton Kutcher. They're obviously a couple.
Right.
And it's called Stoner Cats. And the idea behind this is that you get an NFT off one of the cats, and that gives you the ability to watch anything else that they make as an animation going forward. So you're buying into that sort of stream, but you know, it's interesting sort of investment that it's more towards, you know, the movie industry, I guess, you know.
Of course they're also in the news yesterday over a bathing video with their kids and stuff, which was fascinating and hilarious. So Jake Gyllenhaal, a few others have commented in on that recently. All I heard was that, you know, Ashton in the video 4 times a week already. So it's like,
yeah, the children are melting.
Yes, yeah,
it is funny. Yeah, no, they're a funny couple for sure. So having talked about that leads us into the one piece of security that's been in the news this week, which was, and I saw it on BBC. You might have seen it on one of your US channels. But basically, the story of a hacker who had hit on the Poly network and sort of stole a lot of money and then returned some of it. So he stole $600 million, and then I believe some of that got returned. But the funny part of that is not the actual crime. It was more what the guy actually interacted with, and they have an interview with him in a question and answer session about that, you know, which is hysterical. So did you see this in the news, Chris, Rob?
Yeah, it's pretty nutty. Some they exploited a smart contract flaw, which is interesting.
So the bit that's interesting is the question and answer. And I'm going to read out some.
Well, the fact that they even put this out there, right, is amazing in and of itself. And you wonder, is it preemptive, right? Like I don't know, in some respects, it reminded me of, you know, when a kid knows he's done something wrong and now he's trying to limit the damage. So.
Right. Why hacking? Was the question.
For fun.
For fun, yes.
Because
fun.
Reasons.
Why the Poly network?
Cross-chain hacking is hot. He's not wrong. I mean, that's pretty nuts.
Why transfer tokens to keep them safe?
It's like, well, it's a weird way to keep it safe. Since all y'all can't be trusted with the money because you have a huge security hole, let me help you out and I'll take it away, and then you can patch it and I'll send it back.
See, when spotting the bug, I had a mixed feeling. Ask yourself what to do when facing such a fortune.
Say pretty please, take my fix and not take all the money like I would have, or take the money and say, look what I did, fix it, and I'll send it back.
Why so sophisticated? The Poly network is a decent system. It's one of the most challenging attacks a hacker can enjoy.
Yeah, but the second half is the I had to be quick to beat any insiders or hackers. I took it as a bonus challenge.
I think this guy's taken the pee. You know, it's so
I mean, it's pretty crazy, though. $600 million. That's a lot of money.
But he gave it back. And we won't read it all. We haven't got time. There's a question later where he asks, why did you give it back? Why returning slowly? Oh, no, why returning? And that's always the plan. I'm not interested in money. I know it hurts when people are attacked, but shouldn't they learn something from those hacks? I announced the returning decision before midnight so that people had faith in me.
Yeah, I love it that the messages that he refers to were embedded in an Ethereum smart contract itself, which is mind-boggling to me. It's like hiding it in plain sight, but under a ton of bricks that only certain people know how to look at. It's wonderfully, I don't know, this might be the best feel-good, feel-bad story of the year kind of thing. Well, feel-bad, feel-good story, I should say. Like, oh, we lost $600 million. Oh, you're getting it all back. Oh, and we're going to be more secure because of it. It's like, I don't know if we should call him a white hat, a gray hat, a maroon hat kind of hacker, what kind of hat this fellow wears, but it was an interesting story for sure.
Yeah. Towards the end, it got even funnier. So he said, why refund? Are you a coward? And then the guy replies, whatever. When you judge others, you do define them. Or do you define yourself?
This guy's, he just took a page out of the zero, you know, F's to give category and said, here I am. This is what I can do. What can you do?
Yeah, no, it's, but it is interesting. But it just shows that you, like, even though we're talking about cryptocurrencies, it equally can be hacked, you know, and it's...
Oh, yeah, it's digital. I mean, that's kind of the thing. Yeah. Not the currencies themselves. To be clear, the currency themselves, itself wasn't hacked. It was a flaw in a smart contract code that was hacked, not the currency itself, which is why they say if it's not your keys, it's not your money. And if you don't have it in your own cold storage wallet.
Yeah. Hmm. Oh, there's loads of stories of people, you know, losing their passwords or whatever else to their wallets or whatever. You know, it's just bad practice, isn't it?
Yeah. That's what happens with DeFi. You know, you have personal responsibility for your money. You're personally liable for your stuff. As you should be in this particular case. And if you're not, you might lose $600 million, which is mind-boggling.
A lot of money.
I don't have that to lose.
No, you don't have $600 million? You can't go red $600 million?
I can only do it twice. Our podcast hasn't quite taken off to that level yet.
Three times, that's too much.
If anyone wants to sponsor FCN Paranoia for $600 million, let us know.
We may or may not continue to make podcast episodes in that event. We may or may not disappear completely off the face of the earth.
We may build the world's biggest disc golf course for no good reason.
With an associated...
Certainly not doing any more episodes.
Okay.
Yeah. Jeez. So, in AppScan News, we have Matt joining us. So, Matt, there's a couple of things that you know, obviously we'd like to talk to you about, but maybe between you and Chris, you can help us just with what's been happening with ASOC and the updates around that. Because I know that a lot of that's to do with the engine and stuff and whatever else that sort of comes from your wondrous team. So in ASOC updates, we have a number of things, but probably the mostly to do with the DAS scanning and the IaaS monitoring. Chris, are you able to sort of give us a bit of an update on what's been going on with ASOC?
So like you say, it's a lot of DAS scanning, a lot of IaaS updates. Static analysis was mostly bug fixes and quality of life, you know, improvements that we put in. But for DAS, we have a new single scan page, which I guess is a good thing for DAS.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. So pretty important stuff.
I think the IaaS is the most significant thing, which... Yeah. You know, it's constantly improving, you know. So, but just with ASOC in general, it's just constantly getting updated. I mean, we've just done, I believe we've just done 10.05 for our static, for our on-premise tooling, and as I understand, I think 10.06 is going to be later in the year now. Is that right?
Yeah, highly probable. It'll be much closer to the end.
Yeah. And we're expecting some big things in that, I'm sure. So Matt, while we have you, I know we had you on before we talked about CodeSweep. Perhaps you can give us a sort of update on where CodeSweep is now, because I think when we talked before, it was about to be released. So what's been happening in the world of CodeSweep, and what are some of the wondrous things we can do with that?
Yeah, so probably the biggest thing that has changed recently was we brought CodeSweep to, you know, like you said, when we last talked, it was strictly within Visual Studio Code, within the IDE. Since then, we've brought it to GitHub. We've created a GitHub action where will actually run CodeSweep when a user opens up a pull request, will run CodeSweep and basically only scan the code the user has changed, so that we can then, you know, whoever's coming along to review that pull request later on and take a look and make an informed decision as to, you know, should I actually, you know, is this pull request actually going to introduce some new security issues into the code? And so those scans run really quickly. And then, you know, it shows up as a check run. You know, you see the information as annotations within the actual diff view. And then you can also view the check run to get more additional information about, you know, what are the details about the issue we found? You know, what does bad code look like? How should I go about fixing this problem? That sort of thing.
That obviously working with GitHub, is that something that can transpire or cross over to other platforms such as like things like Bitbucket as well, or is it really sort of stuck with just GitHub at this stage?
Right now it's specific to GitHub, but there's no reason we can't move it to other systems as well. And anything that has that same, you know, pull request concept, any other systems like that, it fit into great, because you know, user submits the code that they want to, you know, get into the repository. CodeSweep kicks in, scans it, and then whoever does the review gets a chance to take a look and see, you know, make an informed decision as far as security goes as to whether or not that code should be accepted. So yeah, I think that we will, you know, branch out into other SCM systems, but right now it's just GitHub.
Well, I personally think it's great. Anything that gives people that kind of confidence level pulling stuff into a repository they're working with is a good thing, right? Raise the awareness for security right from the outset.
Yeah, and the nice thing about it is that there's really not much, you know, you don't really need to do anything. You don't need to install anything or, you know, set, you know, host a server or anything like that. It's really just a matter of, you know, adding a YAML file to your repository, which defines the workflow that's going to run when the pull request gets opened, and that's it. You know, the everything gets run, but you know, you can choose where, you know, where CodeSweep runs. If you really want to, you know, host the image on your own servers, you can, but by default it'll just run on, you know, GitHub's servers, and you really don't have to do anything.
That's pretty wild. Point and click and give it to me.
Yes. Now all we need are non-fungible YAMLs.
Yeah. Non-fungible CodeSweep.
There you go. Somebody out there is sitting there going,
Yeah, well, you get our NFT, you can use CodeSweep for free. Wait a minute.
There you go. Wait a minute.
I can already do that. Yeah, now you can do exactly. It with an NFT.
You know, it is fascinating, though, right? Because, yeah, I mentioned earlier, right, that Colin and I had the skill up days yesterday, but I heard somebody talking about how they've been in the space forever, but they never had secure coding training. And even in looking at universities, right, I was talking to one not too long ago, and I happened to notice in their curriculum that they had a secure coding class. And I was like, oh, this is great, right? Somebody's finally teaching this, you know, and doing all this stuff. But that secure coding class was only mandatory for cybersecurity majors. And I was thinking, you know, we're at the place where secure coding needs to be mandatory for any coding class and any major that's leveraging coding. And so having something like CodeSweep that's out there, that's easy to leverage, that helps get us a little bit closer, you know, in that direction, and helping folks who may not have had formalized training coming out of school or into the workplace, but to be able to get things that are going to help them do their job better and more safely right from the outset. So I'm all in favor of it.
Yeah, and certainly the natural progression of going from this is what's wrong with your code to this is how you should fix it. I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the research that your team has gone into with this concept of providing a fix or auto-fixing the code or anything to that regard based on what we found using, say, CodeSweep or GitHub or whatever you wish to call it, and what that might look like or what we're hoping it might look like.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what we're looking at now. So basically, I mean, every developer knows, you know, no matter what IDE you use, Eclipse, Visual Studio, Visual Studio Code, the IDE tells you when there's a problem, right? So easiest example, compilation problem, right? You create a new class, you're implementing some interface, and you haven't actually, you know, defined all the methods you need to define, right? So the IDE says, hey, tells you that there's a problem, which is, you know, what CodeSweep does today, right? It says, hey, there's a problem here. You got to fix this. You got vulnerable code here. But what the IDEs do with the compilation issues is they say, well, you know, click on that problem and then you can do a quick fix, right? You can say, add the unimplemented methods for me, right? So that's what we're doing with CodeSweep now is, all right, we've shown you there's a problem. We've given you the details about what that problem is. Well, now wouldn't it be great if we can just click a button and say, fix this problem for me, you know, change whatever, change this attribute value to something else or whatever the fix might be. So yeah, that's where we're moving.
That'd be pretty wild. Quick fix. Quick fix all my stuff.
And I mean, obviously with that, you need some level of control around what gets fixed and what doesn't get fixed. Because I'd imagine there's some bits of code that you really need to examine and look a bit closer at. So is it something that would be limited to just sort of like attributes that get switched on and off? Or is it a bit more sophisticated than that?
It can even be a bit more sophisticated than that. And it's really, you know, one at a time, right? So, you know, user saves their code in Visual Studio, their source file in Visual Studio Code. CodeSweep shows, you know, say five issues. And as they look at those issues and, you know, they can highlight it in the source file, they can, you know, look at that issue. They can read the information and say, okay, I understand what it's saying. And then when they click on the quick fix, there'd be an option to say like, I don't know, use a different crypto algorithm or whatever it might be that we're going to, and then CodeSweep would actually go and replace the vulnerable code with the fixed up code. So just like IDEs do for compilation issues, but it's one at a time, right? It's not a massive sweep
through the code. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And in terms of CodeSweep, is that expanding on platforms? You mentioned earlier that we started with .NET. So what sort of things are we trying to do with that beyond .NET?
So we're right now we're in, you know, for IDEs, we're in Visual Studio Code, but we're looking at bringing it to other IDEs, you know, IntelliJ, Eclipse, other popular IDEs where we can, you know, the same exact, users need that same functionality, right? Not everyone uses Visual Studio Code. So, And I think we're up to somewhere well over 20 languages are supported by CodeSweep. So I can't remember the exact number, but definitely something could be used in any IDE you can think of.
Yeah, and we're moving to include some of the more traditional languages where we do trace as well, aren't we? So that we have a quick scan version of those. Is that not correct? Like with Java and C++ or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. We've got .NET languages are supported in CodeSweep today. VB.NET, C#, ASP.NET. C and C++ are supported in ASOC. I think we have C in CodeSweep, C++ coming soon. And I'm sure and Java will be coming along shortly down the road.
I mean, it really does open up a different sort of angle for things. I mean, myself and Rob talk about how we can get a level of coding happening much earlier with this, you know, and I think that's the important thing is that it doesn't take away from the fact you still need automation and all the other good things. It just means that you can introduce security awareness much, much sooner.
I would like in CodeSweep to say oil changes in your car, stuff that you know you're supposed to do, but you don't necessarily always do. And I would like in, say, the data flow analysis and the automation and all that business to perhaps, I don't know, getting your transmission fixed. So yeah, you need it all, but this we're talking about bare minimum stuff you need to be doing with your code. CodeSweep definitely addresses that particular missing thing in many ways.
Yes. And especially for every 3,000 lines of code, right?
You gotta change your oil.
So, Matt, I'm curious, do you think that this could be something, too, that folks could leverage in, say, code reviews, you know, places that are still doing that kind of stuff, right, where they're getting peers together in a way to introduce security into that?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we want to do, right? We want to bring this whole CodeSweep that model to anywhere we can fit it into, right? Anywhere where we could get developers more knowledgeable and get them to find these issues, you know, earlier on in the lifecycle, as opposed to waiting till some, you know, nightly or weekly scan or whatever happens. And at that point, the developer doesn't even, you know, might not even remember the code that they wrote, or they're not, you know, they got to go back and remember, why did I do it this way, and what's the right way to really fix this? You know, anywhere we can get it in their faces right away is really money.
Yeah, and that's such a great point because, I mean, if you know, those that are familiar with sort of the DevOps world and those kinds of things, right, one of the things that was an issue early on was those feedback loops. And so you wanted to know how things were going to behave in production, but the average time that it took to get that feedback was anywhere from a couple of days to, in a lot of cases, over a week. So, mm-hmm. you know, think about that. You make a change, it goes into a build and it works its way through the stages and you're trying to see the impact. Well, you're not sitting there idle, just kind of waiting, you know, see how that fixes. You're moved on. You're fixing other issues. You're doing stuff. So when those reports would come back or you get that defect or that ticket assigned to you, one of the first habits everybody had was, well, I'm going to try to reproduce it in my environment. And if I can't, then it's somebody else's problem. Right. And because your environment's changed, there's all of that contextual reset. And you've got to think about, well, what was I working on last week? All of that kind of stuff. We're seeing the same thing now in security. So being able to provide that visibility in context while I'm working on it is a huge game changer as far as I'm concerned. Right. Because now I'm thinking about it, being able to deal with it while I'm dealing with everything else. One less meeting I have to go to.
Anything to take those Monday/Friday meetings off the board.
Exactly.
But that's all of that can be good, you know. So Matt, what's one thing that we could look forward to in the, I guess, the next half of the year? Well, it's probably less than half of a year at this stage. Is it the one thing that you think will come out that will get everyone interested?
So I think this is the one, the code fixes, the quick fixes for users to make them, you know, like we're saying, you know, don't just tell me there's a problem. And, you know, I'm guilty like everyone else. I don't like to read the manual. I don't want to go and read a page worth of information. You tell me there's a problem. I want to click a button and say, okay, it's fixed. Great. Let me move on with my day. So I think that's the big thing that we'd really like to get into people's hands.
And would that be restricted to certain languages initially? I assume it would be.
We're kind of trying to you know, cover all the languages, you know, but obviously over time we'll do better. But it's sort of, you know, we're just starting this off, so we won't have full coverage of all the languages, and we might not be able to, you know, do a quick fix for every single type of issue that we find. But, you know, we'll start off with some subset of what we find today, and then we'll, you know, build upon that as we go along.
Yeah. So Matt, if people are super interested in CodeSweep, want to try it out, how can they do that?
So the best way to do it, there's two ways. First one would be, if you use Visual Studio Code, just go right within the IDE, go to the preferences, you can go to the extensions and just do a search for AppScan. It'll pop up, just hit the install button and you're good to go. There's no other setup required or anything like that. It's that simple. Then basically as you start coding and saving files, then CodeSweep will kick in and tell you if there's any, you know, any issues in the files that you're working on. The second way, if you're a GitHub user, if you go to the GitHub Marketplace and just do a search for AppScan or HCL, you'll see the CodeSweep action pop up there. And right in the action description, there's steps on, you know, how, you know, there's actually a sample. You can even copy and paste the YAML file directly into your existing repository. So all the information's right there. It's really probably a 5-minute setup, and then you're good to go.
Well, excellent. I think you know, that probably brings us to the end. You know, thanks, Matt, for joining us. I, you know, really appreciate the insight into what's happening. I think it's good to know that we're innovating and all that sort of stuff. So it's always good to hear.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And thank you, as always, Chris and Rob. Rob, any final thoughts, things that we need to pay attention to in the next while?
Well, we got selected for the DevOps Enterprise Summit. So if you're going to be part of the US-based DevOps Enterprise Summit in October, we have a session there that we'll be doing with one of our former podcast guests, Dragon. So it should be very fun. So you can catch up with us there. Otherwise, engage with us on Twitter. We're at the handle @paranoia. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, I'm also doing a session at the Indian DevOps, is coming up soon as well. So yeah, lots happening.
All kinds of good stuff.
So thanks, Chris. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Till next time.
We are devoted.
Absolutely.